Today on the 10-12 podcast, the Big 12 softball regular season wraps this weekend. We've got your full preview with myself, Leah, and Eric. Plus, Oklahoma State softball head coach Kenny Gajewski joins the show to talk about the final Big 12 bedlam. And Texas Tech seniors Abby Orrick and Riley Love join us to talk about their careers and their final weekend in Lubbock.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to the 10-12, the podcast that covers all 14 teams in the Big 12 Conference, plus Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah. We are the flagship show of the 10-12 Network. Find every show on the network at 1012network.com. And of course, we are partners with Sports Social, Europe's biggest sports podcast network. I'm your host, Philip Slavin. Thank you for joining us today. It's been a bit of a hiatus, but we are back. The Dream Team. The Big 12, 10-12 softball coverage dream team is here for the last weekend of the regular season. It's the last weekend of the regular season in which Texas and Oklahoma will be part of the Big 12. Joining me, as they do so often this year, she is the trash talk queen of the 10-12 network. She is Leah Nelson.
I love that. I'm going to put that on in my Twitter/X bio, I think, after we're done recording. But yeah, I'm so excited that the band's back together, the three amigos. So it'll be a good show.
Do we got to do the dance, the Steve Martin, Martin Short, Chevy Chase dance, the three, Leah.
I know. Whatever that is.
Okay. All right. Eric understood. Eric got it. He's with me. Eric is, of course, Eric Lopez, one half of the incredible Dream Team at the Inside the Circle podcast and part of DU1 Softball, their resident bracketologist. Eric, welcome back, man.
It's good to be back. Good to be back with Leah, though. Leah and I, it could get awkward this episode. You might have to play referee at times, Philip. We got our two teams going at it here, so this could be awkward.
Look, this was the first big battle rivalry when this new collection of teams came together, Iowa State versus UCF on Twitter. They didn't give it to us on football, but two fan bases that two very online fan bases. So we'll see how this weekend goes. We got a lot to get to. We have some great interviews coming up here just a little bit. We got Bedlam this weekend, the last regular season Bedlam. So, of course, we're bringing on Oklahoma State head coach Kenny Gajewski to talk about Bedlam and this incredible season. This kind of, he won't use the word surprise, but I will. Somewhat surprise season for how well this team has played. And then we did something similar last year, and I really liked it. But because it is for many teams senior weekend, I wanted to bring on two seniors from the same team. So from Texas Tech, Abby Orrick and Riley Love going to join us to talk about their time in Lubbock this season, the emotions that they're feeling heading into the final weekend of the regular season, and a lot more. So two great interviews coming up. But before we get to that, we have to chat about the last weekend of the regular season. I want to say an apology. You will be talked about Houston, Iowa State, BYU, in reference to things we are going to talk about. But our focus today is the teams who are vying to make the postseason, the NCAA tournament, vying to host, vying to improve their chance to hear their name called on Selection Sunday. That is where our focus is today. So why don't we start off with, I'm going to let you guys just get your animosity and angst and viciousness out early. Let's just rip this Band-Aid off, right? Okay. UCF going on the road for the end of the regular season to an Iowa State team that's always a little bit tricky at home. It's an Iowa State team that is 19-28, 5-16 in conference play. They're a quad three team in the RPI, sub 80 at this point. I'm trying to remember what it is, 84. So definitely a series for UCF, who is, I think at this point, feeling good about their postseason situation. 35 in the RPI, 28-21 overall. Still without a quad one win on the resume, Eric. Not ideal. Eric, what are your thoughts on this weekend series for UCF?
Well, I think they got to win this series. Iowa State's tricky. We know this. They beat Oklahoma State 2 out of 3. They're going to be their senior weekend, so that'll be ticking. Leah, what's the weather like in Ames? Are we playing? Are we good? Are we going to have some snow, rain? Like, what do you guys have in store for us? I don't know.
I think it's going to be some good weather. I think the game's
of course it is. Well, and that's significant. UCF trying to lock up a top six seed. I think if they go a game better than Kansas this weekend, they could move up to that 4-5 range. They're not going to catch Baylor more than likely. I think Baylor's going to stay ahead of them because of the head-to-head. So win the series, and I think you feel pretty good, like you said, Philip, about making the NCAA tournament as a 2 or a 3 seed, probably in Gainesville or Tallahassee. You lose the series to Iowa State, and things get very tricky at that point going into Oklahoma City in the Big 12. So it's an important series. You know, UCF, I thought, played well against Oklahoma. Sarah Willis was phenomenal against the Sooners, holding them to 2 hits. First pitcher to throw 7 innings against Oklahoma and give up just 2 hits in 2 years, since 2022. So she pitched magnificent. And then Sunday, both teams decided to go home run derby. It was good to see UCF score 7 runs off Oklahoma. You wonder if that could get them back on track offensively after really hitting the wall against Baylor and then OU pitching the first 2 games. So important for UCF. Take care of business against Iowa State. Iowa State's nervous because they're one of those teams. You look at the record, it's not impressive. And the committee looks at it, it's like, ah, they're not that great. But yet they always seem to play well in conference games. It's kind of, I'm sure it frustrates Pinkerton about it, but tough place to play. So we'll see. UCF's got to take care of business.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, UCF really needs to win on the outside looking in, but obviously Iowa State plays well toward the end of the season, which again, like you said, frustrates Coach Pink. That's probably why he doesn't have any hair, if I'm being honest, because they always start playing well way too late, which hurts teams who are really trying to vie for that postseason run. And again, postseason is a crazy time this week. This week is really important for a lot of teams because anything can happen in conference tournaments. And so UCF definitely has to be on their A game this weekend.
To answer your weather question, sunny, high of 71 on Friday in Ames. High of 64, 70% chance of rain on Saturday. High
Whoa,
of
hey.
71, mostly sunny on Sunday. So we'll have to see what happens on Saturday. Might we be seeing
I don't
a Sunday
doubleheader.
doubleheader? Yeah.
Tough, man.
Something to keep
I
an
don't know
eye
if I
on.
could deal with another doubleheader, but again, I think UCF win the series. You're pretty much solidly in the field. Probably is the fifth best Big 12 team selected, if I had to guess. Lose and things get interesting. Simple as that. Iowa State really, I think, just playing it out. It seems like, and Philip, you could disagree with me if I'm off on this. Iowa State probably going to be in that 8-9 opening round Big 12 tournament game, the way it's looking like.
Yeah, I feel pretty confident in saying that. I mean, look, they're 3 games behind BYU,
And they lose the tiebreaker to BYU, so
because
they can't
BYU
catch them.
swept. So I mean, that would require for Iowa State to move up past ninth. Would require them to sweep UCF and BYU. Like, they can't. So Iowa State's locked in at 9 at best at this point.
Right. The question is, do they play BYU or a Texas Tech,
Yes,
basically?
which is the big opportunities there, big weekend for Texas Tech, and then of course BYU. We can talk about them. In fact, we can just move on to BYU because BYU, with the look, they're out of it at this point. 27 and 22 overall, 8 and 16 in conference play. But the RPI at this point is less than ideal. Last time I checked, yeah, it's at 60. It's not where you want to be from an RPI standpoint. So they're kind of out of the postseason running. They're going to be in Lawrence for 3-game series against a Kansas team that you cannot lose a game. As simple as that, if you are Kansas, you are walking a very fine line, both yourself, Eric, and you can speak more on this, and Softball America, Brady Verdon, who's been on the show, he puts out a bracketology as well. Both of you guys have Kansas among your last 4 teams in. This late season slide has not been great. They're 42nd in the RPI right now, 45th in KPI, so there's not really a metric that's doing them any favors. That win over Texas A&M, the sweep over Baylor from earlier in the season is huge. They have just not been, they've just, they haven't been as good as late. They just haven't, and they've had opportunities. I mean, this weekend against Oklahoma State, they had the lead in 2 games in that series. Both those games on Friday. Sorry, I had to think about which game I went to. I was there for game one on Friday, doubleheader. Just let me tell you, taking kids to late evening games, not in the hot sun, not the best. But they had leads against Oklahoma State in both of those games on Friday. And couldn't pull away a win in either one. They've lost what now? 7 in a row, including the game to Kansas City. They've
Well, that's
lost.
the one.
Yeah.
That's the one that's put them in this position, because that was a bad scheduling game. Playing them at Kansas City, a quad four game,
No, they were at home.
lose.
They were in
That's a
Lawrence.
ho Oh, that was at home. Oh, that makes it even worse.
Yes.
It makes it worse. To lose that game, a quad four game, 4-1, probably cost them 4 or 5 spots in the RPI, honestly. And they have to win this series. This is the biggest home series for Kansas softball, probably in over a decade. I mean, Casey Hamilton, they've worked so hard. They put themselves in this position. Now, the good news is, if you sweep BYU, you pretty much are going to be the 4th seed in the Big 12 tournament. You'll probably play Baylor. You know, you got a chance to win to get a quality game against Baylor. If you beat Baylor, get to the semis, I think you're in. But you mentioned it. BYU is a team that was in the mix until last weekend when they got swept by Baylor. BYU could swing the bats really well. Can Kansas get over the hump, be at home? If you drop this series to BYU, you're in trouble now, because you're probably going to be dropped to 5, 6 seed. The nightmare scenario for Kansas is you lose the BYU series, you drop to 6, and you play Oklahoma State in Oklahoma City again in the Big 12 tournament, and you get bounced there. You might be out completely, because that is just a rough finish. So, a lot of pressure for those Kansas Jayhawks to come up with at least a series win against BYU at a minimum, if not sweep. And that's a dangerous series, because BYU is going to play loose and they could swing the bat. And, Kansas, they're going to have to hit BYU pitching. But there's no doubt that Kansas right now is on that fine line. One of the things, 96 non-conference schedule strength doesn't help. 2 quad 4 losses doesn't help. They have a quad 3 tie. They have some metrics that are good. They have 8 top 50 wins right now, but whew, it's pressure time for the Jayhawks this weekend.
Yeah, like I said, they've lost 7 in a row. They've lost 9 of their last 11. It's not been a good stretch after a really strong start. I would be, of all the teams in the Big 12, Kansas, if they were to miss out, I think I would be the most disappointed in, as excited I was about them, about everything they brought back, all the seniors they have this season, like so much is riding on making it this year, that if they were to miss out this year, I would just that would be really sad and upsetting, and very disappointing. So, huge, huge weekend for them against BYU. It's not an easy series to end on, where you have a situation where you just can't afford a loss, period. Forget losing the series. I don't think Kansas can afford a loss against BYU, and adding another quad three loss to the resume after they've already lost that game against Kansas City. Losing that game at home against Kansas City in that midweek was. I am not pro dropping games to benefit your RPI. I don't like it. I can two wrongs don't make it right. The RPI being bad does not mean that you should then also drop games to benefit yourself in the RPI. But if there was a game they should have canceled for RPI purposes, that one would have been it, because it wasn't going to help you much even if you got the win. So, Leah, any thoughts on this series between Kansas and BYU this weekend?
Yeah, I just have to say I feel for those Kansas girls. I've been in that situation my sophomore year when we were right on the bubble and every game toward the end really counted. The pressure you feel, the anxiety, just all the nerves you want to make postseason, you want to make regionals so bad. And every game counts. So I feel for those girls. I'm rooting for them. I think we've all been rooting for them since, beginning the season. So it should be a good weekend.
Well, and it's interesting because it's senior weekend. So you have the emotions of that, right, Leah? How you
Yep.
have senior weekend and yet the pressure of, hey, we got to win a series here to ride the ship here. Otherwise, this big goal that we've had since January, fall could go
Right.
out the wayside here. I mean, it's amazing. This is a defining weekend for Casey Hamilton. To me, it's a Casey Hamilton series.
Yeah.
She's got to pitch at least 2 of these 3 games, if not all 3, and try to lead them. I think she could control the BYU offense. I'm not sure anybody else on that staff can control BYU's offense. And then on the other side, Kansas got to hit BYU pitching.
Yeah.
BYU's pitching's had a lot of injuries this year. I think BYU's actually had a good year considering the injuries that Gordon Eakins dealt with and the pitching. Kansas needs to hit them. And if they don't, they're going to be in some trouble.
All right, the other team that out of it for this year seems pretty much locked into the 10 seed would be Houston, barring some surprise wins over Baylor, who's just trying to put themselves in as good a position heading into the postseason as they possibly can. They are playing really well. They've won 6 of the last 7. They swept UCF and BYU in back-to-back Big 12 series after getting swept by Texas, dropping that terrible game against UT Arlington at home. Lost a game at Utah that was a little bit disappointing. Utah kind of there on the bubble as well, but you've got to feel like Baylor heading into this weekend is sitting in a comfortable spot from an RPI standpoint. Like what they did early in the season is doing a lot of good for them. What they did out in Mary Nutter, the wins over UCLA and Missouri are helping out their resume a lot. It seems like they've kind of turned some things around here. Getting the sweep over UCF was a nice little late resume bump, being UCF being a quad two. Now you got to end the regular season at home with 3 games against Houston team that, I mean, had a nice promising start. Now they're going to probably finish in last place, barring some sort of surprise and getting some wins over Iowa State. Of course, Iowa State won that series, so Iowa State owned that tiebreaker. It feels like Houston's locked into the 10, and at this point, Baylor's just trying to avoid bad losses and kind of keep things rolling to some extent heading into the postseason.
No question. I think Baylor's done a nice job rebounding here late with the sweeps of BYU and UCF. That was a big road series sweep for them at BYU. You still got two, you know, Binford and Crandall. Their offense showed some life against BYU. Let's see if we see that against the Houston pitching that has struggled. Baylor, I think, has a great shot to be maybe in that 4 seed in the Big 12, which is kind of what we thought they would be at the beginning of the year. The route that they've taken, not the route we thought they would take, but they've got a chance to finish here as a 4 seed in the Big 12. I think they're locked into a 2 seed in the tournament. I think Lafayette, Louisiana, could be their destination there in the regionals because they could bust there. And that, in fact, if you're a Louisiana Cajun fan, that's what they're rooting for. Maybe Baylor helps them there. But experience with Baylor, senior weekend. I'm curious to see how they handle the Houston offense. What does Houston show? Houston kind of pulled an upset over Texas Tech, and maybe the most baffling result of the recent weeks. Not that Houston beat Texas Tech, but that shut them out, which is perplexing to me. But nonetheless, I think Baylor takes care of this series, and they should. And I think they'll be in that 4-5 matchup in the Big 12 and probably the favorite in that matchup to get to the semis.
Yeah, Baylor's been here before. They're comfortable. I mean, obviously, don't take Houston lightly. Don't take these games lightly. But it'll be a fine weekend, and I'm excited to see what they do. I thought they were going to be 4 all along in Big 12. Cracked up, Eric, when you said they just took a different route, because they totally did, but they ended up in the spot we thought. So, I mean, you got to do what you got to do. It doesn't matter how you get there, as long as you get there. So
remember, at one point, Baylor was like at the bottom of the conference standings.
Yeah.
They had one conference literally win, and now they're 11 and 13. So very nice. Yeah. Cause what, they started 1-8. Cause they got swept by OU in Kansas and went 1-2 against Oklahoma State to start conference play. So quite the turnaround for Baylor from 1-8 to 11-13. It kind of feels like Kansas and Baylor both at 11-13. They're not catching up to third to Oklahoma State. Mm-hmm. UCF, we talked about, 10-14, one spot behind them. Like it's that battle for fourth, fifth, and sixth place right there. Let's talk a little bit about Texas Tech and Texas for this weekend. Texas Tech at 8-13. Not getting that Iowa State series. From a conference standing standpoint and from a record standpoint, is kind of hurting them right now. Losing to Houston was not ideal. But you're sitting 2 games back from UCF, Baylor, and Kansas. Sure would have been nice if they could have had that 3-game series against Iowa State. Not that Iowa State couldn't have won that series, but if you're Texas Tech, you feel like you could have gotten at least 2 of 3 in Ames from Iowa State and be sitting here in a much better spot to even be continuing to get all the way up to the 4 seed. Instead, it kind of feels like with them having to end the season against Texas, they're locked into one of those day one games, probably the 7-10 game against Houston on Wednesday in Oklahoma City next weekend.
You're 100% right. And you look at Texas Tech. Here's the problem that Craig Snyder's bunch runs into a little bit here. You got to play Texas. Now, if you win a game against Texas, that's huge for the resume. right? It's like at that point, that almost kind of pretty much gets you off that last four in, or you feel really good about where you're at. The negative is if you get swept by Texas and you're in that seven seed, you got to play Houston, which doesn't help your resume, number one. Number two, it's a team that just shut you out, which again is a perplexing result. My point is Texas Tech's got to be careful here, or they can run themselves into that bubble themselves where they're or either in first team in or last team, first team out based on how they finish here. The Houston game doesn't help them one bit. So the thing that's going to haunt them is that Houston loss where they got shut out. That was not ideal. And you mentioned it, the Iowa State snow out. We wondered how that would impact both teams. One could argue, well, you're not playing Iowa State helps your schedule strength, but you didn't pick up wins there and narrow the gap from four to six. Instead, you might be done, stuck at seven, having to play Houston on that Wednesday night of the Big 12 tournament.
Yeah, in my head, I personally kind of forgot that they even canceled that tournament. Again, I was like, oh, literally, I was like, oh, Texas Tech, Iowa, Iowa State, whatever. But you just broke it down perfectly, Eric. Like, that's, yes, Iowa State doesn't have the best record, RPI, whatnot, but like, it's really important to have a good seed in the Big 12 tournament. And again, anything can happen in conference. I'll just reiterate that. Like, it's a new season. It's crazy, crazier stuff has happened. And so that's a series that they definitely could have gotten at least two wins, if not three. So they're probably beating themselves up over that. But at the end of the day, there's nothing that could, like, they couldn't have done anything. It was snow, it was weather. So they just kind of got to live with it and move on.
What's going to be tough for Texas Tech, if you are in that 7-10 game, you're going to play Houston. So let's say you get swept by Texas, you lose three in a row, and that, look, it's they're the number one team in the RPI. It's not like it's going to hurt the resume, but it is more losses. You're 28-17. Let's say like they get swept. Now they're 28-20. They beat Houston in round one. Okay, and then you're probably going to play Texas again or Oklahoma in the quarterfinals of the Big 12 tournament. So you're going to end your season waiting for Selection Sunday, having lost four of your last five, or you could say five of your last six, because you would have had that loss to Houston and a win over. Like, it's just like your the last appearances on your schedule would have been loss at Houston, win at Houston, swept by Texas, win at Houston, or win against Houston and loss to Texas. Like, it's just they're in a really tough spot the way this schedule is working out at the end here. Look, you've had plenty of opportunities along the way. You've dropped some games you shouldn't have. We can lament the loss of the Iowa State series. I'll say this, it does still feel like this is a Texas Tech program that Craig Snyder has moving in the right direction. It does feel like they, I get that you don't want to have that many losses to end the season, but I'm not sure you're going to hold against Texas Tech. Like, you lost to Texas. Lots of teams have lost to Texas this season, okay? There's only one team in the country who's got a series sweep over them. So let's not hold anybody against anybody too. It'd be like holding it against somebody for getting swept by Oklahoma. You're like, everybody gets swept by Oklahoma except for Texas.
Right.
So we'll kind of keep an eye on them.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Obviously, for Texas, the Big 12 regular season, it's wild to think about the fact that Texas won this series against Oklahoma, but still sits a game, is ahead of them by a spot in the RPI, but is still a game behind them in the standings in Big 12 play. And so they don't control, like, they've got to go out and sweep Texas Tech, but then they need Oklahoma State to at least steal a game from Oklahoma and Norman for Texas to be able to have that tiebreaker come into play and claim the one seed and win the regular season and avoid Oklahoma State most likely in the semifinals. That's a big one. In the sem, the only team that's that won a series against them this season in the semifinals of the potentially of the Big 12 tournament.
Well said. I think you look at Texas, they're going to be that Houston loss is haunting him right now.
Oh, yeah.
12-10.
Well,
if
the
you win
BYU
that
loss.
game,
The BYU loss they had as well.
Texas didn't lose to BYU. You mean Oklahoma lost to
Oklahoma,
BYU.
That's right. Sorry, forgive me, forgive me.
Yeah.
Who was the other
But the
team
Houston
Texas lost to?
Oklahoma State. They lost two out of three to Oklahoma State.
That's right. Houston, two to Oklahoma State, and one to Oklahoma. That's right. That's
they
right.
They won Oklahoma.
OU lost to BYU. Okay.
But the Houston one lost because they scored 10 runs. They led 8-4 and just left that game away. They'd be in great shape tied with them at first place. Instead, you're right. They need Oklahoma State to get a game. They got to sweep Texas Tech. That's not a guarantee. Texas Tech can hit the ball in Lubbock. Again, if Texas Tech were to win a game there, I think that could really push Texas Tech in a really good spot to make the tournament. For Texas, you're playing for the Big 12 title. They have not won a regular season title since the Cat Osterman era, back in 05-06 range is when they won the regular season title. But you're also playing for the national number one seed. I have Texas as the one seed over Oklahoma as a two. That's going to come down to the Big 12 championship game. And you brought up a great point. The difference between being the one seed and the two seed in the Big 12 tournament is, if you're the two, you're going to see Oklahoma State and likely Lexi Kilfoyle in the semifinal versus probably a combination of Baylor, Kansas, UCF in the semi. So that is critical because Texas has had tough times against Oklahoma State. So this is a lot big for them. Can they get help from Oklahoma State? I think they can, but they got to take care of Texas Tech's business first to secure and give themselves an added opportunity for the Longhorns.
I think this is making me just like really happy chatting about this because I think this is just growing the game of softball. At the beginning of the season, I did not think anyone would ever be a number one seed besides Oklahoma. So it's just really exciting to even be having this conversation that there's so many different programs and the fact that, you know, Texas could win and then be the number one national seed. It makes me happy. I think it's making people go a little crazy. But it's going to be a really good postseason for sure.
Yeah, you obviously have read my timelines. People have gone crazy after my bracketology stuff. Texas.
Yes.
You saw that, see? Texas, 7 top 10 wins, 15 quad one wins. Nobody has more in those categories than Texas. That's why, as of today, they would be the number one national seed. But the Big 12 tournament could go a long way in deciding who the one seed is.
It's not. I'm gonna give Texas a little bit of credit here.
Yeah,
it's not just that they have 15 quad one wins; they're 15-5 in quad one. You say, well, Georgia's got 14 and LSU has 14. They play in the SEC. There's a lot of quad. Tennessee's got 14. LSU's 14-11. Georgia's 14-13. Tennessee's 14-7. They're 15-5. They played 20 quad one games, most of those out of conference, and they're 15-5. Like, it's not like they got 25 opportunities from conference play to get a bunch of quad one games to give them a bunch of wins. They still have to earn those wins, but they didn't have the opportunities to get those that LSU and Georgia and Tennessee and other SEC teams did. They did it with 15 quad one in 20 quad one games. It's not a shot at the schedule building. They did the best they could in non-con. So like Texas has the best resume, period, of anyone. Just in my opinion, their non-conference strength of schedule was 5th in the country. So like, think in this, 5th in the country. They did everything they could to put themselves in this position. That resume is very, very impressive. And I don't think anyone else's is as close to it. I don't care how many conference games you got against other good SEC teams. Like, Texas built a resume that's very respectable and has done a very, very good job with it. So, we gotta mention Bedlam here. It is not just the final regular season Bedlam matchup in Big 12 play, as we know from Patty Gasso, and as you'll hear from Coach Gajewski, that the series is going to continue in some capacity, looking like one game a year in OKC moving forward. But this is not just the last regular season Big 12 matchup in softball. It's the last Bedlam Big 12 regular season matchup, period. Baseball's already done. There's none of the others. Every other sport is done. This is it. These three games are it. This will decide the Bedlam. I mean, there's some postseason stuff to get, but like, this will decide the Bedlam trophy. Like, this is it. This is it for Big 12 Bedlam in the regular season. Maybe they match up again. It's a big series. It's in Norman. Coach Gasky said, like, they're keeping even keel. They're not trying to talk about all this stuff, but you can't ignore how big this weekend is. You can't. Like, it's impossible. And I know they're doing everything they can. And I know OU fans are jazzed, and that stadium is going to be insane for this. I know Oklahoma State fans are nervous as all get out. If you're OSU, and I understand, like, you want to go sweep them, you want to win this series. it would take a sweep for OSU to even consider winning the Big 12. We're going to set that over there with other things like unicorns and stuff like that. No offense to Oklahoma State. But if OSU can get one win here, one win, in my opinion. Eric, am I crazy? Look, I said when OSU lost the series to Iowa State, their chances at a top eight seed were gone. They were done, and they have been ever since because of those losses. If OSU can get a win over Oklahoma to add to the resume and do something that only three other teams have done so far, can OSU get themselves back to a top eight seed?
Yes, the path is there. The KPI, I believe, has them like five.
Yeah, five. Five.
Which is pretty impressive. And look.
And LSU's 10. Sorry.
Somebody doesn't like LSU on the show. There you go. Can they get, let's say, you mentioned it. I think a win against Oklahoma boosts their resume. And remember, let's say they make the final in the Big 12 tournament. That means they would have beaten either Texas or Oklahoma in the semifinal. Plus, if they got to this final, they would have also won a game against a six seed UCF potentially, or Baylor or Kansas. That's a top 51. So my point is, every game from here to the end of the, before Selection Sunday, every game Oklahoma State will play is likely going to be a top 25, top 50 RPI game. So they still got a chance to move up if they win some games. I think Oklahoma State's path is anywhere from 8 to 12, how they fare. I think if you get swept by Oklahoma, I think it becomes a lot harder to get that eighth seed. But if you win a game against Oklahoma, and let's say you get to the semis, maybe even the final of the Big 12 championship, if you get to the final of the Big 12 title game, and you win a game against Oklahoma here this weekend in Bedlam, I think you're a top eight seed, maybe the eight seed exact. If you get swept by Oklahoma, make the final, you might be in that 9-10 range. But I think 8-12 is your range for Oklahoma State. Obviously, the Iowa State series we talked about, that's the one that's going to haunt you if you're an Oklahoma State fan. If you just, and it's not even dropping a game to Iowa State. It's the fact you lost the series. You dropped two games. If you win that series, I think you're very much in this. But yes, the path is there for them to get to the top eight. Very similar to a couple years ago, if you remember, when they beat Oklahoma in the Big 12 title game, jumped into that top eight seed that year.
We're going to get Lexi Kilfoyle and Kelly Maxwell on Friday. We all know it.
I hope you're right. That's going to be interesting to me, what Oklahoma does with that. Because I talked full spoiler on the In the Circle podcast.
Ooh, tease. This is what we call it in the industry, is a tease, folks. We were teaching Leah about this today.
That's very good. I interviewed Beth Mowins, Michelle Smith, former Cowgirl, Jessica Mendoza, all three of them. At the same time, they're calling Bedlam on Saturday and Sunday. And we talked about the possibility about, and I asked them specifically, how are you going to handle the Kelly Maxwell storyline? And they're going to be all in it. They're not shying away from it. That's number one. Number two is they're wondering, are you throwing her Friday night? Or are you throwing Kirsten Deal, who's been really good the last few weeks, and save Maxwell for Saturday or Sunday and avoid Kilfoyle in that matchup? I'm not saying they're going to do that, but that's going to be the interesting chess match if you're Oklahoma. Is do you go to Maxwell with all the hoopla on Friday night against Kilfoyle, or do you save her to Saturday against Deal, and Saturday against somebody else on Oklahoma State staff, maybe get a game under everybody's belt, more relaxed? I don't know. I'm going to be fascinated to see how Oklahoma plays this, because they have to. To win a 12 straight Big 12 championship, they know that if they drop a game, odds are they're going to share with Texas, unless Texas Tech helps them out, which could happen. Let's be fair about that. Stranger things have happened in Lubbock. But I am fascinated to see that whole plotline. And how is Kelly Maxwell going to handle that spotlight facing her former teammates head-to-head? And Lexi Kilfoyle in particular, who, to me, with a strong weekend here, locks up the Big 12 pitcher of the year, if not already.
My heart is beating just thinking about it. If I could give my opinion, I think better Kelly Maxwell than me, but I think they're going to start with a Deal on Friday. I don't think they're going to feed into the matchup of, Kelly Maxwell and Lexi Kilfoyle. And I think they're going to try to get that win on Friday and then let Kelly do her thing on Saturday without all of that extra buzz around it. That's just what I think is going to happen from my relationship with Patty Gasso, which doesn't exist, but I just think I know her so well. But we'll see. I'm so glad that I mean, I wish I could be there to watch that rundown, and I wish I could be a fly on the wall in both locker rooms.
Well, you're gonna have to watch instead with television, which is not a bad alternative. And no. Friday night's interesting because that's an FS1 game.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I don't know what to expect from
who's
that.
Who's on the call for this game? Does anyone know?
I don't know. Nobody, like, I'm hoping somebody knows by the time this airs. We probably will know, but I don't know. I'm really intrigued by that. So random to get right into this, and then ESPN will take care of it Saturday and Sunday. Is there any – let me ask you both this. Do you think there's any chance Kenny Gajewski – you just spoke to Kenny Gajewski. I know the answer to this, but I got to ask out loud. Is there any chance you think Kilfoyle doesn't start Friday and they save her for – yeah, Friday, Sunday for her, right?
She will go Friday, Sunday so they can have her for 2 days.
I agree.
We know what the weekend rotation is. It is Lexi on Friday, Ivy on Saturday as long as she can go. And if you have to bring out Acock, you will. If Ivy didn't have like them last Saturday, Ivy didn't – she came off banged up last Saturday, and there's been no news or question that I've seen about Ivy Rosenberg. So the hope is an expectation is she'll be ready to go on Saturday. And then you bring Lexi on Sunday. I think you stick to what's worked. You stick to what you know. I wonder if they save Kelly for Saturday or if they save her for Sunday and say, we're going to have this matchup at some point, but let's do it on Sunday if we already feel like we've got the series locked up and that it takes some pressure off of Kelly to just go in there on Sunday. And we've already hit against Lexi, so we know what we're getting, and that gives us an advantage to have Kelly out there on a Sunday. So Kelly will pitch one day this weekend. We just don't know which, and it's going to be really interesting. Man, if it's Friday night, if Patty just goes,
I would love that.
Screw this. Let's just give the people what they want. Or do you give ESPN what it wants on Saturday, which wouldn't be, I don't know. See, we got FS1 Friday.
She would never.
ESPN Saturday and ESPN2 on Sunday. So plenty of opportunities for this one.
Well, here's the thing, too, and it was interesting because I just saw Oklahoma in person. Maxwell came in relief in the Sunday game against UCF because Nicole May struggled against UCF. She got hit. They brought in Maxwell, and then Deal closed the game. They had to bring in all three pitchers on Sunday to close down UCF. So I think all hands are on deck in this game, too. Like, I don't know if, like, you're going to necessarily see from an Oklahoma standpoint, if Maxwell is not clicking early, they might go to Deal early. I think Kirsten Deal is the wild card for this series and for the rest of the postseason for Oklahoma. She's two straight weeks in a row now, Big 12 pitcher of the week. She pitched magnificent against UCF. She could be the wild card in this series and decides this series for on either side.
It's going to be an interesting series this weekend. I mean, just beyond just the drama of it being the final one, it's Bedlam. It's always exciting. It's always interesting. There's so much on the line here for both teams. It's going to be a heck of a weekend. So we're going to have to keep an eye on all of it. All right, we got to make picks, and we got some interviews to get to first. The one thing you need to pick are some shirts at Charlie Hustle. You need to go to charliehustle.com. Sponsors here, the 10-12 podcast, and for the 10-12 network. They are big, big 12 fans. They make incredible vintage-inspired clothing out of Kansas City. They've got every big 12 school currently, plus Colorado. They're going to get Arizona State. They're going to get Utah. Give them time. They're working hard at it. It's not always up to the clothing company. Oftentimes, it's up to the school, so tweet at them. Don't tweet at Charlie Hustle. But go to charliehustle.com. They've got promos going on all the time. They've got a bunch of sales stuff that's on sale. They've got some good sale stuff for UCF, Iowa State, Oklahoma State. Every big 12 school's got something in there that is up to an additional 40% off. So go check that out. If you want something that's not on sale, use our promo code 10-12-15, TEN1215. Get 15% off all non-sale items. If this is your first time listening, understand that doesn't mean just your first time buying. As long as it's not on sale, use that promo code. We would appreciate it. They would appreciate it. They love the Big 12. Show them that you appreciate that they love the Big 12. Go shop Charlie Hustle. Vintage made fresh. All right, we're picking three series, our last three series. One programming note, we will be back, the three of us, on Monday. We're going to come in early next week since the Big 12 tournament starts on Wednesday. We're going to get our tournament preview, our Selection Sunday scenarios from the bracket master himself, Eric. We're going to have that for you on Monday to drop early, so you got plenty of time to preview. Because once the games start, the preview doesn't matter anymore other than just for, you know, posterity's sake. So we'll be back on Monday. No other interviews, just us. Won't be too long of a podcast. And I promise that we're going to get football and stuff coming soon. I can't right now. I've got notes. I've got pages of notes. I've got pages and pages of notes. So we've got three series to pick. Let's start with Kansas versus BYU. This is, again, Kansas has got to get themselves a sweep here, I think, to feel remotely comfortable about Selection Sunday. Leah, who wins and what's the record?
I'm feeling good about my girls at Kansas. I'm just going to put it out in the air. Sweep 3-0 against BYU. Everyone needs to send their good juju out there because we're all rooting for Kansas.
Eric?
I'm going to go Kansas. I'm going to go 2 out of 3. Hamilton wins the series on senior day, though. 2 out of 3, Kansas. BYU's good, man. They're scrappy. Do not take BYU lightly. That's a tough 3-game. I'm going to go Kansas 2 out of 3.
I'd like to say sweet, but I think I'm with Eric here. Kansas should win the series. They're at home at senior weekend. They know how important this series is. I think they go 2-1. BYU's bats are good enough that they're going to be able to put up some runs on Kansas. I think Kansas gets this series. I think they'll hear their name on Selection Sunday. Please, Mother Mary, Holy Jesus. But I think they get this one 2-1 as well. Okay. Texas Tech hosting Texas for the final time. Also, a final Big 12 showdown between two conference foes, soon to not be. Three games here. Leah, who wins and what's the record?
I'm in a sweeping mood. I'm going to have to go Texas 3-0. They're just playing really, really well. And they know the end of the season is really important. So they got it in the bag.
Eric?
I think Texas wins, but I think Texas Tech's got a chance to steal a game here. They're going to be fired up. It's going to be packed. Last time you played Texas, they could score some runs. I think they'll score some runs on Texas. Can they hold off Texas in one game, at least one game? I'm going to say Texas sweeps, but I would not be shocked if Texas Tech steals a game and kind of helps Oklahoma win the Big 12 title, ironically enough.
Texas has not lost a game since their series opener against Oklahoma on April 5th. They have gone almost an entire month without a loss. During that stretch, their closest win, let's see, they had a 4-2 at Kansas, a 6-4 against Texas State. They've got multiple run rules, multiple wins by numerous. Like, it hasn't really been close. I want to pick Texas Tech to get a win here because they're at home in Lubbock and it's senior weekend and there's this great senior class and we've got Riley Love and Abby Orrick here coming up in an interview in just a minute. I think Texas sweeps. I do. I think they know what they're playing for. They're playing to lock up a number one overall seed. They've got to get. If Texas Tech's going to do it to me, it'll come on Sunday after OU's locked up the regular season and Texas has a little bit less to play for and Texas Tech has a little bit more. If Texas Tech's going to get a win, to me, it's on actual senior day Sunday. If Oklahoma is already 2-0 against Oklahoma State and they're feeling, you know. So I'll take
the sweep. I could see it being a 10-6 type of game, 8-6 type of shootout where Texas Tech just out hits Texas, kind of like Houston did in the first Big 12 game of the season. It would have to be something like that, I think. But I think Texas Tech's capable of doing that, so we'll see.
How long ago was that Texas dropped a game at Houston? Man, it's been some time. All right, last one. We're doing Bedlam, because of course we're doing Bedlam. Oklahoma, that beautiful new ballpark, hosting Oklahoma State. Three games this weekend. Kelly Maxwell, Lexi Kilfoyle, all the drama, FS1, Fox, ESPN, and ESPN2. Leah, who wins? What's the record?
So, since it's in Norman, I think Oklahoma is going to win the series, but I think Oklahoma State is going to take one. So, 2-1 Oklahoma.
I think Oklahoma wins, but I think they sweep them. I just think... This is tough. Oklahoma has not lost. an opening game one of a Big 12 series, how does Kilfoyle, if you're going to win a game, I think it's got to be one of the Kilfoyle starts.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if she could beat him on senior day. Maybe she can, but I'm going to be proven. You got to prove me wrong. I'm going to say OU sweeps. I think it's close. I think it's dramatic. I think those seniors for OU rise to the occasion and win that 12th straight Big 12 title.
Look, it's not playing BYU where they can pull off some upset because you're just not expecting it. It is going to have to come on Alexi Day, and that's no shot at Ivy Rosenberry, but it just is. If this was in Stillwater, I'd pick OSU to win a game. I would gladly say right now OSU will win one of the games in Stillwater. It's in Norman. Look, Lexi's best games have come in the biggest games, period. She hasn't been as on point later in this season. She's much better she's been great on Fridays, less so on Sundays. If OSU is going to pull off a win here, I really think it's going to have to be game one. I really do. Mm-hmm. No shot at Ivy. I don't think it's going to be on Saturday with Ivy and Kyra Acock or Katie Kutz or whatever combo you want to put there. Lexi's not as good on Sundays. And once OU has seen her, it's going to be that much harder to pull it off. Again, she got two wins over Texas. Like she did it twice against Texas. She can rise to the occasion. My brain says OU sweeps at home because they call it whatever it is, but they take the series seriously. My brain says OU sweeps. My heart says OSU finds a way and gets a win that they need. Like, it doesn't matter. It has no effect on any outcome of anything. OU wins 2-1. OSU finds a way to steal one. I'm putting it out in the ether because I want it to happen. I want it to happen.
It's not a crazy pick. I mean, it's possible. Lexi can beat them. Oak State can hit. It's not crazy. I don't think it's a terrible pick. We'll see if that plays out. Should be dramatic. By the way, this has become one of the most watched regular season games now every year. Bedlam.
And I think it's that much of a struggle just to be able to get one game on the schedule. Sure. Hey, they're getting one, so I guess I'll give them some credit. We talked to Gajewski about that. We've got that interview coming up here. We've got our two Texas Tech seniors. Leah, Eric, it's been a pleasure. We will be back on Monday. I'd give you all the social plugs. Go listen in the circle. Go find Leah on social. All her family is all TikTok famous because of her. You can find more about that. But we've got two long interviews. It's a long episode. We're going to get to it. We'll be back on Monday. We will talk to you all again then. This weekend is the final regular season softball Bedlam matchup, so who better to bring on the podcast and talk about his absolutely incredible team and program than the head coach of the Oklahoma State Cowgirl softball program, Kenny Gajewski. Coach Gajewski, welcome back to the 10-12.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be back here.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming in from an airport. I know Wi-Fi there can be a little spotty, but we appreciate you taking some time today.
It's all good. I'm glad we could make it work. And like I said, it's always good. It's a big week and a big fun time. So I'm glad to be able to talk about all that.
We'll get to Bedlam here in just a minute, but I wanted to start with just this team this year. You know, listening to some various interviews with you and reading some stuff, like it seemed coming into the season that you were a little unsure about what this team was going to be. You chose to kind of stay younger, let the players on your roster get out there and play, as opposed to bringing in a wave of transfers and older players. Obviously, you have a few transfers who joined this roster. Now you're heading into the final weekend of the regular season, 42-8, ranked in the top 10 in every poll, projected at this point to be at worst a top 16 seed and host a regional for the fifth straight time. Would you say in your mind that this team has, I don't know, surprised you at how good they've been? Did you feel like this was always in them? What's kind of your evaluation of your team now versus where you were before the season started?
Yeah, I think the surprise word is kind of an interesting word because I just didn't know how much we would win. I didn't know how well we would play and respond in certain situations. But the one thing that I did make very clear that everyone is that we're talented. We have talent, and you just don't know. So I don't want to use the surprised. I'm just very happy with them. I'm happy with the way that they work, the way that they love each other. It's been really cool to watch. It's truly been as rewarding of a year as I've had in a long time, to be honest. And I think that's just because we didn't know what we had, except we knew we had talented kids. We just didn't know how they would perform against the schedule, and against, expectation. And so it's just been really cool to see.
I wouldn't call it a gamble, but obviously choosing to go with your younger players, playing your freshmen, your sophomores as much as you have, and then see, as opposed to, you know, bringing an upperclassman over them and seeing them perform and step up the way they have this year. I mean, that's gotta feel even more rewarding because you took that chance and it has paid off, I think, even more than most of us outside the program expected this year.
Yeah, I mean, if you cut me wide open and got the truth, like, I plan on being at Oklahoma State for a lot of years. Like, this is not like a stepping stone job. I mean, we built this program into a top five, top 10, repeatable program. And if you just keep recruiting, if you keep bringing in transfers over the top of who you've recruited to play here, you're either one, not recruiting well, or two, you're planning on trying to win quickly and leave. And that's not me. I've never said that at all. The transfer portal has been to supplement deficiencies. And I don't care if you're the number one team in the country, or you're the number 200 team. We all make decisions that don't pan out. That's why recruiting, there is no book, there is no crystal ball. So when you make some mistakes or kids make different decisions or fall out of love with softball or work or whatever, the portal gives us an opportunity now to supplement. And that's what I want to do. I just want to use that to supplement our current team. And that's the way we've gone about this. So I don't look at it as risk. I look at it as, this is who we recruited to play here, and they're pretty dang good. And these, a bunch of these kids have panned out.
As we mentioned, the freshman class has really stepped up. Rosie Davis, Carly Godwin, both named Freshman of the Year Top 25 list by the National Fast Pitch Coaches Association. I mean, just in your mind, like, how does this freshman class stack up with some of the classes, incredible classes you've had come through Oklahoma State during your time there?
Oh, it's been a blast with these guys. I mean, obviously the ones you guys are hearing about are Godwin and Rose, both just doing great things. We still really like Katie Coots. She's just not getting opportunities with the older kids that we've got. And then I have two other ones that are getting a lot of time. That's Taylor and Dersen and Tia Warsop, who are two speedsters that play outfield that are getting a lot of pinch running, outfield play, some pinch hits, a few starts here and there. These are kids that are going to be factors here for a long time. And, you know, and so I think that's the cool thing. It's the same thing that happened with like a Claire Tim, and you know, she had a lot of at bats this last year, about 45, and did well, but just couldn't crack the lineup every single day. Now she's in there and now she's having a great year. So, we've got sometimes you just got to wait your turn here. It's just the way it is. It's difficult because a lot of these kids have never done that, but, the kids who are willing to stick it out, this is something I told them when I recruited them. Hey, it's going to be tough here. Like, you're going to have to buckle in, dig in and go. And it's what makes coaching so much fun, when kids trust the process and trust you that hey, they have a chance. They just got to earn it.
I'm glad you mentioned Claire Tim. I'm not sure there's a better nickname around Oklahoma State sports right now than the Tim Reaper when she gets one over the wall to the gift shop. Obviously, like we mentioned, it is a younger roster, but you've got five seniors that you celebrated this last weekend for the last regular season home series: Alexi Kilfoyle, Ivy Rosenberry, Caroline Wong, Scotland David, and Julian Pouillard. Like, there's a lot of very different and unique stories with each one of them. You've got some who've transferred in, some who've had long careers, dealt with injuries for long periods of time. I mean, Ivy Rosenberry stepping up the way she has in the circle this year to be, you know, right there with Lexi Kilfoyle. Can you speak a little bit about the impact? And I know it's there's a lot that you could say about all of them, but a little bit that you on each of the seniors who will be leaving you at the end of the season.
Yeah, we could do a 30-minute show on all of them. That still may not be enough, you know, with me. So, but this group, you know, they'll go down as a crazy successful, crazy powerful group for what they've done here. And not only what they've done in their careers, but what they've done this year to mold a group of new people together and hold it together and make a shell around them that's so hard. I mean, the bubble that they put around these young kids has been crazy to protect them. And now they're letting them, it's like the mama bear that's letting her cubs out now to go explore, and they've done that. They've protected them, and they've just meant so much to me in this program. And it's just, we're gonna miss them a lot. We say this every dang year. We miss these kids that go away a lot, but it's time for them to go away. I mean, to be honest, it's time for them now to set sail on their what's next. And you know, once we get this year done, but they've earned that right to you know, to do what's next and be successful, because that's what they've done here. And that's all I've ever asked them to do, is just put us in a great spot. You know, give us your all every day. And that's what this group has done.
I want to say congrats, because obviously Cowgirl Softball has set a regular season attendance record this year with more than 22,000 fans coming and watching games. That tops last year's record, which was the previous record, by I think 2,500 people on the year, which is incredible. And sets kind of aligns with what we're seeing across softball. Amanda Scarborough put out a tweet asking for SIDs to, you know, tell her about different records. And you're seeing attendance records set. Single games, weekend series, regular season across the country. Obviously, it is proof that college softball, women's sports overall, but college softball has continued to grow in popularity as it's getting more attention. But I mean, for your program, how big is it to continue to see the fans come out in the size that they are and support your girls and what you're doing there in Stillwater?
Yeah, it's amazing. We could we could double that number very easily if we had more opportunity for people to get in. And that's not a shot, it's just the truth. I mean, we keep adding stuff and we keep filling it, and we still have a list that's a mile long. I know that our competitors right down the road have the same problem, and they just built a 4,500 seat stadium, and they could keep selling it out and adding seats. So this sport is man, the trajectory that we're on is crazy. It's exponential. And I think what I'm very proud of is that the people that are in charge of this sport are doing everything that they can to grow it right, to give opportunity. And I'm just honored to be a part of it. I'm honored that I get to lead this program that so many people are excited about and proud of. I think that's all I could ever ask, is that we could put a product on the field each day that people are just leave there, can't wait to show up and then leave and just feel very proud of what they've just seen.
You talked about the people kind of in charge of the sport. It's a nice segue to me asking you about the RPI. Obviously, we continue to have conversations about the impact of the RPI and it's how much the committee uses it when determining who gets to host, who's a top eight seed, who makes the tournament. Meanwhile, we have other rankings like the KPI and now the Diamond Sports ranking that come out. We're seeing lots of different metrics that are showing, a decent variety from the RPI. What are your thoughts on the impact of the RPI? I know it's something that is important to you and you pay attention to when building out a schedule. What are your thoughts on the impact of the RPI and whether or not we should be looking at other resources and other rankings and metrics when making decisions?
Yeah, I don't think that the rankings should be any part of this. I don't. It's too much human nature. There's too many emotional factors in that. There's too many friendships in that. I vote in one of the top polls, I take a lot of pride in that. I spend a lot of time every Sunday night or Monday to create a top 25. It's not easy. I look at who they played. I look at what the scores were. I paid attention to a lot of stuff. But I still don't think rankings should be in there because I'm not sure everybody takes that type of time. I'm good with the RPI. I don't understand it. We've used it for a long time. I'm good with the new KPI. I know that they're using that as well. I think that that's the two that they're using the very most. And I think it's good to have more than one number that they're using. The thing that frustrates me about RPI is, I go play what I think is a really good schedule, but I'm getting docked for who my opponents are playing. And I don't understand that. You know what I mean? It's not fair to me. Like, I feel like I'm getting no credit for going to the University of Florida and playing them on a road game that we set up off of our schedule. I feel like I'm getting no credit because maybe their opponents that they played in their non-conference is not very good. Well, they don't need those opponents to be great because they get them in the SEC. And so now I'm getting docked on that, on stuff like that when I play SEC teams because they don't always play the best schedules outside of their conference. So there's just some weird stuff. I don't understand all of it. And it's frustrating, and it is what it is. But I'm still going to go play. If I can go play Tim, I'm going to go play him every time I can. I try to play any SEC school I can. I'm going to try to play the top teams, no matter who they play, no matter what their theories are. That's what I'm going to do. So it's just a weird thing. I think there's some smart people that are making decisions, and I mean, we'll be okay with what they decide. We're 5 in the KPI, and I think we're 11 or 12 in the RPI. It's weird. I don't understand how there could be that much of a discrepancy, but I'm not smart enough to figure it out.
If you put that much research in your top 25, you and I need to start swapping notes on Sunday nights when I'm prepping for the podcast. I'll get your thoughts. I'll share mine. Okay. This weekend, huge weekend. It is Bedlam. It is the final Bedlam Big 12 regular season matchup. In fact, this is the final regular season Big 12 Bedlam for any sport is this weekend series. I mean, it is big in a lot of ways, not just for your team and for this sport, for this season. I mean, is as an Oklahoma State fan, like I am one who is sad to see Bedlam kind of go away. Now, obviously, we can talk about the series continuing here in a minute and Patty Gasso's comments, but I mean, like I know you want to take every weekend as it's just another weekend, and I understand that, but like how is your team feeling? How are you feeling about this weekend and understanding kind of the weight of what it is?
Adam, we're not talking about it like you just explained, to be very honest. And I know people probably don't want to hear that, but like I can't put it doesn't in the end of things, it's not really part of our main goal. I mean, our main goal is to get to the final eight. I mean, that's the main goal. So is it important? Yeah. Is it going to feel incredible when we walk into that place? Yeah. Are we going to probably be emotional to start? Yeah. But once the first couple pitches are thrown, it'll settle down. I think in time, I'll be able to reflect back and go, wow, that was cool. I'm glad we were a part of that and all this kind of stuff. But there's just too many other variables that go into these kids and their minds that are being fooled every day on social media and all this other stuff. My goal is just to keep them normal. We're in dead week. Our kids are focused on school. Finals are the following week, and then the Big 12 tournament. I mean, there's so much, at hand. I don't even know that they have enough time to really embrace the magnitude of these games. But in the same sense, I don't want them to. I want them to just be where their feet are, just enjoy each other, play their best. And if you start putting too much on them, start putting too many, well, this is the last, and this is this, and this is this. It's just people get emotional and do weird things out of character. And I just don't want that. I want our kids to be normal and play normal. And I don't need them to play better than they've ever played. I just need them to play how they play. And if we do that, we'll be in a great spot. And so that's kind of the message the whole week. We had a good practice yesterday. I actually wasn't there. I was recruiting. I got to watch it on film. I saw it. It was really good. I'll be there today. I'm flying in, and I'll have media at 12:45 and go right to practice. At one. So it's just a busy schedule. But like me, like I'm doing my normal things. Like I'm gonna go recruit. Like I that's just part of what my job is. And so my staff is preparing. I'm preparing. I'm not trying to do too much of this stuff. I'm being asked to do things like crazy. I'm like, hey, we've been playing games all year. Where have you guys been? You know what I mean? Like, I just want to, it's just a normal week. It's just another conference week. We get a chance to, create some havoc at the top. We're obviously third, and we can win a couple games. It makes things really interesting fast. Let's just go win the first game. That's the focus. Let's go win Friday night. And if we did do that, then we'll go try to win the next game. And that's the bottom line. That's the way we're taking this week.
I mean, you have been pretty vocal about Bedlam continuing, and on what today's Wednesday, on Tuesday, Coach Gissot mentioned that Bedlam will continue next year at USA Softball Hall of Fame Stadium. Can you share any more about what Bedlam is going to look like moving forward?
I was kind of interested that Coach Gasso made those comments. Her and I have not talked. Our sport administrators have. I've been very open about wanting to do something. I think what she said is fair. We've been trying to do this for a long time to secure this rivalry. That we play, whether it's one time, whether it's three times, we're up to do whichever. Right now, it looks like one game. We're gonna do it at Hall of Fame. I think we have a couple of dates that we both agreed upon that could work. I think we're down to one date now because I've already got another date set. So hopefully that pans out. We'll figure it out. But I'm excited and hopeful. Two of the best teams in the country. They're obviously the best team in the country, and I think we're in that next group of teams, and I think it makes a lot of sense. I think we could do a lot of cool things with one game in OKC. I think we could just pull off some amazing things, and so I'm hopeful that we continue down this path. But that's really all I know. The talks just started a few weeks back. I told my administrator, look, if they're not interested, then let's just quit wasting our time. We just need to focus on us as well. So I'm not going to wait around forever. But like I said, I haven't had any conversations with Patty at all. I know that our administrators have talked, and where it's at. It's exciting.
All right. Well, I look forward to seeing hopefully that date on the schedule for next year. I know Oklahoma State fans all are. Look, I know you got to get on a plane here and head back to Stillwater pretty quick, but I have to at least ask this. Obviously, your son Gage was born in February. Congratulations, new dad. How's fatherhood treating you?
It's amazing. I've got two older kids. I've got a son who's 18 and playing in a super regional baseball ball game here tonight. I've got his name's Preston, and my daughter Logan, she's 13 and just growing up, and we just added Gage, and our Gage Gray. Gray is man, it's been a blessing to us. It's my wife Rachel's first child. So it's just been incredible to watch her be just an incredible mom. And I'll tell you, I think I'm a little bit better dad at 52. A little more patient. Kind of been around the block a little bit. There's so many new things out for kids now than 13 years ago when my daughter was last born. And it's pretty cool to see all the new stuff out there. But it's really cool. It's really cool to see the way our team just loves him. My two kids, they just adore him. It's really cool to watch my young daughter fall in love with this little guy, and so we're just having a blast. I'm not gonna lie, I'm tired. It's that part of it's real, and I'm not really doing a whole lot. I mean, Rachel's doing all the hard work, I'm still tired. It's just interrupted sleep and all that. Even though I'm not getting up to do a whole lot, it's still kind of a crazy deal. So that part's real, but I wouldn't change anything. Good chance we'll probably do it again. And I just told her, I said, you need to hurry it up. We need to get going. So I'm not getting any younger over here, but I appreciate you asking. We're having a blast, and Gray's, he's been a blessing to all of us.
That's awesome. Well, as a fellow father of three, I didn't wait for my third as long as you have, but still, I can understand the better at that age than you were the first time around. I feel like the more times I do this, some things are better, some things are like, oh, okay, well, you're always learning something new every time.
Yep.
But congrats to you and your wife and your family. Coach, thank you so much. This has been fantastic. Good luck to you and your girls this weekend in Norman, in Bedlam, and we'll continue to follow the rest of the season.
Thank you as always. And I always to tell you, I admire your background there. I think that background is one of the coolest things I've ever seen. So appreciate what you guys do and highlighting us here and this week. And it's
thank you so much, Coach.
Thank you.
It is the final weekend this weekend of the regular season. Look, some schools have already had senior day, as they'll be on the road this weekend. But for those who will be experiencing their final home series, it's going to be a very emotional weekend for everyone involved. So I'm very excited. We kind of did this last year. I had two seniors from Kansas, so I'm very excited to do this again this year. This time, we're going to Texas Tech. We're going to Lubbock. Welcome, Abby Orrick and Riley Love, to the 10-12 podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, we're so excited.
Okay, I mean, I want to start off with this. You guys have been in Lubbock for your entire careers through college, which is, first off, congratulations. That's awesome. It's been a bit of a weird time. I mean, you were recruited by former head coach Adrian Gregory. You played your first few seasons for former head coach Sammy Ward, and now you're playing for head coach Craig Snyder. It's a while to have three, I'm going to use air quotes, head coaches during your time, even though you didn't play for one of them. I mean, what is that? It's become kind of commonplace in college sports to see head coaches come and go and move around. And obviously things have been a little bit different at Texas Tech. We're not going to rehash that past. But I am curious from both of you, your perspectives on kind of having to go through all of that through your 4-year stint and recruitment at Texas Tech. Riley, why don't you go first?
I think it's an interesting opportunity that we all kind of got. Maybe a little bit of a blessing in disguise that we did have to go through some adversity in our 4 years of being here. Obviously some adversity and obviously some super highs and super lows, but I think it really prepared us for facing adversity in the real world. But I mean, I could speak for me and Abby both and the rest of the team that we could not be more grateful and happy to have the coaching staff that we do have now. But yeah, I mean, I love Tech and that's why I stuck it out for 4 years, but that's all I got on that.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to agree. I mean, I think going through the first couple of years, it was just like you're in a new world, you're in a new place, and then on top of everything. So I think like all of that and us just being able to stick together, like our culture now is really based off of like family culture. And so being able, like there's 10 seniors this year and the majority of us have been through everything together. And so we were all like, hey, like we're going to stick it out together. Hey, like we love the culture here. We love each other. So it's really cool this year just being able to play because like we're all best friends on the team and we're all like ending our softball career together.
And is that part of what has kept you guys there this whole time? Look, I don't fault anyone for any of the transfer portal for whatever reason. It is unique, less so I think in like baseball and softball than it is football and basketball to see players stick now through their entire careers. And for you guys to stay in Lubbock through all the ups and downs and turmoil and coaching change and so off is very impressive. And so I am curious, is it just that togetherness and that group that you guys have? What else has kind of gone into your decisions to stay there in Lubbock for your entire careers?
I think it was a big decision of we're going to do this and stick it out together. Like you said, all the turmoil and the ups and downs and stuff like that, I think just brings us, especially the senior class, together more than anything, knowing that we did it for each other and did it for the younger girls and the older girls before us. But I know senior weekend this weekend is really special because all of the seniors kind of went through a bunch of up and downs, you know, starting with COVID, starting with coaching changes. So it's been a pretty cool and different experience that we've had as a senior class.
I mean, I just have to agree. I mean, It's so much fun now. I mean, I think you can see it on the field, like just how much better like the team's performing this year. And it's all because like we're doing it because we're having fun. And it's because we're playing because we want to play and we all want to play for each other. So, I mean, that's just, it just goes to show how chemistry within a team and how like good the coaching staff is and how everything, like we're basically the same team as we were the past couple of years. And this year we're really just trying to turn around and you can see that.
Talk to me about Coach Snyder. I had him on the show to start off the season. I've really enjoyed his 2 years in Lubbock. I think he's really building something there. I mean, what is your perspective on Coach Snyder, what he has built, and kind of the future of Texas Tech under him? Abby, why don't you go first?
I mean, I think he's his really, oh, sorry. His really big thing is just like preaching like connectivity and like us being a family and like that's our culture. He's really big on like, hey, if we need a mental day, like it's more than just a game, and he knows that. Whereas some coaches are like, hey, you're here to play softball, and Snyder makes it to where it's like, hey, you need to have fun while also doing this, and you also like he allows our family to come inside the facility, and like we do all these fun things, like we have a family night every weekend, we travel, so it's just one of those things where he allows us as players to really feel connected within the program, also with our family. So I feel like that's a really big culture piece that I like.
I mean, I couldn't agree more with Abby, but I think there's two parts to Coach Snyder. There's part one of family and our team's a family. That big piece that he preaches is that, you know, we changed the name of our team room to family room. That's what he's about. And there's part two of him being this incredibly knowledgeable coach of softball and has all taught us things that we have never learned before in our 18 years of playing softball. I mean, his knowledge of the game, knowledge of the mental side of the game is something that I've never experienced before. So it's kind of those two things that make Coach Snyder and our coaching staff so unique, and so special to us.
Obviously, like I said, this is senior weekend. It's very likely your last time playing a game in Lubbock. Have you started to kind of work though that thought process and the emotions that are going to come with that this weekend, or are you just hoping that maybe we'll just kind of keep that until Sunday?
I mean, for me personally, I think I'm just gonna hit it head on. I mean, obviously it's like bittersweet moments for this weekend, and like he's spreading out. So we have 10 seniors on the team and he's like spreading it out. So like we're doing three seniors Sunday or three seniors Friday, three seniors Saturday. So we each get our like special moment in time, so it's not all rushed. But I think it's one of those things too where it's like we feel so good within this year that it's, yes, it's sad, but we're also leaving knowing that hey, like we're doing the best we can. Hey, we had so much fun this year. So it's not so much sad. It's just, man, we're really just gonna like miss being around each other and the game.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're pretty content with the softball, like the sport specific side of things coming to an end. But I think it's just everything else that comes with the sport that we're gonna miss the most. And that I know for sure that that's what I'll be emotional about is, you know, I don't get to travel with 26 of my best friends anymore, and that's what's going to be upsetting to me. But
Not completely understandable. I mean, you've been around this, as you said, these 10 seniors for so long that you'll stay together and you'll keep connected, but it's not the same as being around each other every single day for as long as you have. I am curious, you know, everybody always has personal goals and goals that you set out for yourselves each year. What were some of the goals that you as seniors in this class set for yourselves this year, and then you personally, and do you feel like you've been able to achieve some of those?
I know goals that we set as a team as a whole, and the senior class kind of set that was we wanted to go to postseason. That's our goal. I mean, that's something that we haven't done in our 4 years of being here specifically. But I think personal goals, I know for me was it's my last season. I'll never play a game of softball again. So I think just going out and having fun and enjoying the sport while I have it was a personal goal of mine. And not putting so much pressure on myself because softball is such a small part of our life and what we have to do after it. So I think just as a team, you know, making the best run that we can, and personally just, you know, giving it my all and having a good time while I'm doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that too. And going off of it, it's like we made sure this year, like we're never taking anything for granted. I mean, like COVID took our senior year away, so we never got to do any of the like last prom, last any of that. So we are just making sure that this year, like every single thing we do, we're doing it like to fully 100% that we can do.
Does it add anything to be playing, of all teams, Texas for this final weekend? I mean, I know every weekend is a different week, but this is the last weekend of the regular season. It's senior weekend, and you're playing a rival, an in-state rival in Texas, in their last weekend series as members of the Big 12. Does that add anything extra to you guys, or is it already just knowing Texas is on the schedule enough?
I think playing Texas for us is it's exciting just because of how well they're doing. But I think for us it's just another softball game that we get to play, or another softball series. So we just kind of going out there, playing our game, not really focusing on who we're playing against. But it definitely is cool that and I think in our career we've ended up playing Texas as our last game, either in Big 12 or the conference. So I think it's kind of ironic that we're ending it this year like that, but it's just another softball game that we get to play, and we're excited for it.
Yeah, and like going off of that, Snyder's last thing that he told us this weekend was just like y'all did everything that you've done to go to postseason. So it's like he literally was just like, go play, like go have fun. And I think that's one thing that we're really going to carry over to this weekend. It's just not to make it bigger than it's supposed to be. And we're just going to focus on all the seniors and just to make this, wow, to make this weekend like memorable for us.
Yeah, I think it's wise to say this is a weekend about us, the seniors and the team, and the end of the regular season more than it is about the opponent. And I mean, I think that's a great way to take it. I'm curious, both of you, looking back at your time in Lubbock, looking as the end is coming, what do you feel like you was the impression that you have personally left on this program, as you end your time there, and the thing that you want to kind of leave behind for the program as it continues on without you?
I think in I was thinking about this. I got this question the other day. But I like reflected on it, and I think it's really cool to see the game grow, 'cause we're in a pretty cool time here where women's sports is becoming a big thing. Things with the WNBA and softball, and softball World Series are getting more views than MLB World Series. Like, it's really cool the time that we're in, and I think that in Lubbock, such a small, close-knit community, it's really cool to see the turnout of fans and little girls coming to our games. So I think that's the impression that I specifically want to leave, is on those little girls that want to play softball in Lubbock, and watching the crowd grow and watching the stands grow in our 4 years here has been incredible. And I think that, I mean, all the credit goes to Coach Snyder and the program that he's building, but I think that's just the impression I want to leave on little girls in Lubbock is, it's pretty cool to see.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that too. I mean, I'm from a really small town. So it's like all my littles back home, they're all like, oh my gosh, Abby's so cool. Or like, Abby is just so famous. I'm like, yeah, okay, guys. But I mean, I just love doing it for everybody else. And also like me, and like even like the girls that are on the team that came in as a freshman, they're just like, oh wow, like you're so old. And I'm like, no, like this will be you. Like, don't take anything for granted. And so I've really tried to like just instill that, like, do it because you want to do it. Do it because you want to have fun. Like, it's really not, softball is softball, but you need to do it because you want to do it. And like, you mess up, okay, like you're gonna mess up all the time. So it's like one of those things too, where it's like we try to just show each other, even daily, that it's okay to mess up and it's okay to just be yourself.
I love seeing the growth in softball across the country. I think it was Amanda Scarborough put out a tweet asking all the SIDs to share whatever records are broken, and just seeing the programs who are setting attendance records, single game records, series records, season record. It's proof that outside of just the Women's College World Series, that the sport is growing, the popularity is growing, more and more fans are paying attention. And look, that's great. I think it's great. I think softball is fantastic. That's why we put so much time on this podcast into it, because it's fun and it's exciting and you get to have so much personality, and the games are always riveting. And I love seeing a sport that is as fun as it is get kind of the recognition that it has deserved for quite some time. I'm curious, both of you, are both of you going to continue to find some way to stay in softball afterwards, or is this really it for you moving forward? Is this the end of softball when the season's over?
I mean, I can't imagine me just never picking up a glove again. But I mean, I'm sure in some form of, I don't know, slow pitch maybe, or I'm not sure. I don't think anything like competitive, but I don't know, maybe some recreational softball here and there would be in my future, but nothing for sure yet.
I know my plans after I'm done is to open up like a multi-sport facility, kind of like back where I'm from, just to help out the little kids, like where I'm from and everything, just because we don't have any facility like for any sport. So that's kind of the plan right now, just softball, baseball, sports in general. So.
That's awesome. I mean, it seems based on some of your comments that you really have a passion and a heart for like the younger kids and helping them develop their passion for the sport and for sports in general, and especially those back home, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I do think my calling is like for little kids and just like teaching them like what I know and everything like that, and just making them love the game like I know I do. So that's just, I love it.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. What are you girls going to miss the most after the season done about your time in Lubbock and about softball, just to, or the team in general or Coach Snyder, whatever it is, any of it and all of it? Like, what do you feel like is going to be the thing you're going to wake up that first day when everything's done and go, oh man, I missed this?
I think just competing. I've always been a competitor since I was little. I love to compete. I love winning. And I think, waking up when I don't have a softball game the next day is going to be a little bit rough for a bit. But also just, going in the locker room and seeing, like I said before, like 26 of my best friends and getting to go out and compete with them is going to be hard. But, I'll find the joy in other things and other interesting hobbies that I pick up that I'll have to pick up.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, I think it's more so all my people are 10 minutes away. So it's literally if I need anything, sad, happy, whatever, I want to go grab something to eat, I have 26 people and we can literally meet up in 5 minutes. Whereas next year, we're all going to meet in our real world, starting big girl jobs, all this stuff. And it's just like, oh, like we can't see each other every day. So I think that's just going to be something that I'm going to have to get used to, just going back to like a small country town where I literally live alone. So we'll see.
All right, so looking to the future, you've been around this team. There's a lot of, there's 10 seniors leaving, but there's a lot of players who are going to be coming back. Looking ahead to next season, who are the players that are going to be here still that you think we all need to be very aware of and keeping an eye on when Texas Tech begins their season in 2025?
I know that we have a really good incoming class coming in. I think they're ranked like number two recruiting class in the nation, which is pretty cool. But I think keeping an eye on the freshmen this year, Logan Halliman, Reagan Jennings, McKenna Mitchell, I think those girls are going to be pretty outstanding starters next year that you need to keep an eye on. I think in specific, I mean, all of them are great, but Logan has the best bat barrel control that I've ever seen in however many years I've been playing softball. So I think, keeping an eye out for her, I think she's going to be big one day.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that. I mean, Reagan and I have a special connection in middle infielder, but I think my person would definitely be like Kaylee Wyckoff. She won freshman of the year last year, and like this year, she her to her term, she's like, oh my gosh, why am I not doing good? I'm like, Wiki, you're batting like 450. So it's like one of those things where it's like she's like, oh my gosh, I have to do so good, and I'm like, Wiki, you're literally so good. So I just feel like, as long as she just continues to play how she plays, and I know that she loves the game of softball so much, and she's a true utility. Like, you never know where he's going to put Wiki in. She came as a catcher. Sometimes she plays first base. She's in the outfield. So she's just an all-around athlete that will do whatever she needs for the team.
Okay, I wanna we're gonna wrap this up, but I gotta ask about the tumbleweeds because tumbleweed contest at the beginning of the season is hilarious. I love it. It's so much fun. You'll have to go out and find a tumbleweed to bring it back. Like, what are the things like that that Coach Snyder has brought in that you guys have enjoyed the most about him as the head coach there at Texas Tech for your last 2 years?
I think Coach Snyder is all about doing, I mean, the tumbleweed had like a message to it of being all in, like He told us to bring a tumbleweed, and all of us went found the biggest tumbleweed. And that was like the message of the thing was to be all in for everything. But I think Coach Snyder's always doing some type of fun activity, fun. He loves pulling pranks. Like, he's just super lighthearted and loves bringing fun into the game of softball.
Yeah, and like going off that, like we have different themed days throughout the year. So like a couple weeks ago, we had like a Taylor Swift day. And to end practice the day before that, he was like, "Hey, like we're all gonna make friendship bracelets because that's what they do at Taylor Swift's concerts." And so we each like made a friendship bracelet for a girl on the team. So it's like that just goes back to being like family and stuff. Whereas he's like he sees how hard that we work, and he doesn't push it because he's like he realizes that how much we put into the program, and so he always is just giving back, and it just makes it so much enjoyable to go to practice every day for him.
Yeah, I think it was the Sunday game of the UCF series. We did an Easter egg hunt before the game, and they hid like 250 Easter eggs in the outfield, and like we all went and found them. So just like fun stuff like that, and you know, it keeps us outside of the, you know, this game means so much, and that, you know, it like really brings into perspective why we're playing. I just think it's really cool how he brings like these life lessons into fun little things like that.
I love it. I think he's done a great job there so far. I'm very excited about where this program is going to continue with him as the head coach. And I think that you two have left an incredible mark on the program and have helped lay a foundation that's going to continue to be built off of. So I did want to say congratulations to both of you on, I think, successful careers. Both of you enjoy this final weekend. I know it's going to be a lot for softball, the emotions and everything, but you've earned it. You've earned the recognition and what's going to come this weekend. And so congrats to both of you. And thank you so much for your time today. This has been absolutely incredible. We really appreciate it. And good luck with what comes next.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Podcast Network.